Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bauer and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. My guest in this episode, if you don't know him by name, you'll certainly know him by voice. And I'll show you what I mean in just a moment. He is an absolute legend of motorsport in this state, in this country, particularly in the sport of speedway motoring. And he's been the voice of the Perth Motorplex for its entire 21 years or so of its existence, and prior to that, some 35 years at the famous Claremont Speedway. In fact, I'm told that he never missed a meet at the Claremont Speedway in all 35 years. He even took his lovely wife, Linda, on their very first date to the Claremont Speedway. So obviously the high octane fuel and fumes is in both of their blood. So I'm looking forward to hearing all about the life and times of the famous Con Migro. But before we say hello to Con, have a listen to this.
They lock together in Mortal Kombat. Three and four way. Look at Tom Payet. Get out the road because I'm coming through. Grabs the lead with a paralysing burst of speed in the number seven car.
That is the voice. Now let's meet the man, Con Migro, recently retired, or shall we say scaled back from your duties as the voice and the figurehead for motorsports here in WA. Con, hello and welcome. How are you?
Good to be with you, Tim. I'm looking forward to this little show. It'll be something different for me.
You sound so subdued, Con.
Well, I normally am. I'm not normally a loud mouth, but
really,
when I get hooked up in the speedway world and motor racing, I just let it all hang out.
Just something happens.
Yeah,
because that's, I suppose, as so many people would know you and know of you, isn't it? Hearing those, particularly people who aren't, you know, those diehard speedway fans would go, wow, that guy. I know that guy. I've heard that guy for so many years.
Yeah.
He's pretty fired up.
Yeah. Well, that's the type of sport, speedway in particular. It's very explosive. It's full of action. I mean, there's never, ever a dull moment.
Yeah.
And I think that it just brings out, gets the juices flowing, and for commentators, it's a given that you've just got to get with it and be excited with
get
it.
Get revved up.
Yeah.
Maybe you can give us a little sample later on. You've still got a few revved up moments in you.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. People must stop you in the street, though, do you, when they know who you are? And, you know, do they ask you sort of to, you know, it's a bit like a magician doing a magic trick, isn't it? Is it, come on, give us your Friday night fever.
Yeah. Well, often when I play lawn bowls now because I'm getting a bit old in life, but often when I play against guys, you're not the guy from the speedway, are you? I'm the guy from the speedway.
Yeah.
Which
seems quite out of sync with the very placid game of lawn bowls.
Well, lawn bowls to speedways is in a different world.
Yeah.
But, often, at different functions, I've been asked to do a Friday night, speedway night or whatever.
Yeah.
Particularly when I've had a few beers celebrating or something.
Yeah.
Everyone will leave it, Mr. Speedway.
Yeah.
Away we go.
There it is. It's never far away. You've recently, as I say, not retired as such, but you've stepped back from some of your duties. I mean, because you were manager, commentator, promoter, spokesperson, you were everything to Speedway here in WA for such a long time. So tell me what it is that you've pulled back from and what are you still doing?
Well, I've pulled back from the week-in, week-out commentary on Saturday night. I'm going to just do something else with my life. I'm still going to go on a fairly regular basis.
Mm.
My son Gavin, who runs the show now, he is introducing Fast Fridays, and that's where the young amateur men and women who want to maybe aspire to become into the big league will get a chance to strut their stuff. And I'm going to hopefully get some young men and women that are interested in coming into the commentary team. They talk to Gav, and I'll try and teach them a little bit about what is required to become a commentator.
What is required? Have to get to your level of excitement to pull it off, or is it more than that?
Not necessarily. but I think that you've got to have a passion for the sport.
Yeah.
You've got to love the sport. And as I say, it's very addictive. And I've been pretty fortunate in my life. I've been able to travel extensively. And so consequently, particularly Australian voices in America, I mean, you just got to believe just how they just love the way that we talk for a start, and of course our commentary is rather unique because they are very subdued in the way they commentate.
Is that right? Yeah. The American motorsport commentators.
Yeah, well, there's a bit of pizzazz in it now, but it's nothing like we do in Australia, honestly. It's
really?
I think the Australian commentators in all forms of sport, and I'm not being one-eyed when I say this, but I think we're light years ahead of everyone.
Yeah.
Race-calling commentators, our football commentators, and, of course, our motor racing guys, I think we pretty well, we bat well above our weight, as they say.
Yeah. So when you go over and commentate internationally, are you considered a bit of a novelty and a bit of an oddball?
Very, very much a novelty. It's not a thing that's planned. Like, you, for instance, you might go to Knoxville in Iowa, which is where the world's biggest race is, and I, for many years, used to call a couple of events over there in the Knoxville Nationals, which is the biggest race in the world as far as sprint car racing is concerned. And often I'd walk out the box and I'd say, "Hey, sir, are that English you're speaking, is that proper English?" I'd say, "You better ask a Pommen. What's a Pommen?" Not realising they don't know what a Pommen is.
Well, just different lingo.
And of course, and they said, you know, they love the way that we talk. For instance, you know, they said, when you were seeing those drivers around the track, and you're going to race around the track, and they're going to do their victory lap, or what they were words that they never normally heard.
Yeah,
they had their own ways of doing things.
Yeah,
and anyway, so it was quite a good. And the Americans used to love it.
Yeah,
and a lot of Australians, even now, I think even in the movie industry, they seem to do pretty well. In being accepted.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as I mentioned, you know, your voice, and particularly during the days of the Claremont Speedway, just became such an institution, such a familiar sound on our TV screens. Oh, there's that guy getting all worked up about things happening in Claremont on a Friday night. So yeah, I mean, no one can say you didn't go out there and spread the gospel, as you put it, Con, over many years. So I'm not surprised that people turned up in droves to share their stories and pay tribute to you.
If it hadn't been for COVID-19, I believe that there was a lot of people coming from the east. In fact, I see phone calls since saying that they were going to come over and surprise me,
which would have
been great. Friends of mine in Brisbane and particularly in Sydney that were going to come, but because of COVID-19, they could get here but probably not get back home, and they didn't want to do the quarantine. And you know, life's, as you know, pretty messy.
Yeah.
Trying to move
around. It's all a bit complicated at the moment, isn't it? Tell me, is there something you can put your finger on? What was it that got you back every week? Was it the people there, or, you know, is it the roar of the engine, smell of the fume? Like, what is it that was so addictive to you?
I can't really answer that properly, but I was a driven person. As I say, I believed in it, in the sport so much.
Yeah.
And I knew the heartaches that the people went through to go and race. It's not like, and I'm not knocking league footballers, but when they go to the ground, they're probably given a pair of footy boots, socks and shorts and a jumper. And most times when you go and race speedway, you've got to pay a lot of money. For instance, in a sprint car, you're looking around about $1 million.
Just to get a car.
Or get a car and transport and the whole lot. Yeah. And then down through the ranks it goes, but it's a lot of money. And so those people that race, they've got good sponsors, good parents, they are maybe have great businesses or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so they're really putting in over and above the call of duty to go and race and to do what they believe is their passion in life. And then, of course, if they're good enough, they might get answers. If you're a race car driver, you might go to, say, America. And if you're a motorcyclist, you might go to England or Europe.
Mm.
And that's where they get the big bucks.
Yeah. There must be something on a visceral level, though, that appeals to you as well. I mean, just the noise.
It's very exciting.
The excitement of it, you know, that anything can happen.
Well, it is, but I remember when I first got hooked up, I was going to Christian Brothers in Highgate, and one of the brothers or one of the guy's fathers bought Orb Lawson on. Orb Lawson was an international speedway rider. In fact, I took over the speedway from him, and he gave a talk about the life of an international speedway rider. Now, as a young boy, I must have, something must have set in my brain and my head. I couldn't believe the life. I come home and told my parents that I was going to be a speedway racer. And the first thing my dad did was he couldn't believe, because he'd been a football horse racing person.
Yeah.
And of course he couldn't believe that his son wanted to be a speedway rider. I did find out many years later that he had a mate of his at school. He went to Christian Brothers Fremantle, and one of his mates had been killed in a speedway accident.
Oh, gosh.
And that was something that his mind, and so he never really got into it at all. But it was just how, I don't know what drives people to do things a lot of times in life.
Yeah. And don't question it, go with it.
And I just loved it. And I deeply believed that they were doing things that not normal human beings could do.
No. Yeah. We need to take a break, Con, but we'll get right into your backstory. I'm particularly curious to hear about the moment. As I understand, someone gave you a couple of tickets to go to the Speedway as a kid, right?
Correct.
Yes. I love that story. We'll get into that right after we take a break. Con Migro is our special guest. This is Inspiring Stories. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Will this be his maiden victory? Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together. Kevin Williamson wins his first feature race. What an awesome drive.
There you go, another magic moment, another familiar moment, and the voice of Con Migro, Speedway legend here in WA, and our guest in this episode of Inspiring Stories. Con, can we trace your involvement with the sport back to a time when you were just a kid and you were lucky enough to get your hands on a couple of free passes to the Speedway? Is that where this whole crazy journey started?
Well, that particular time at the Orb gave the talk at school. He gave the kids passes, and of course I went home, and my parents were no way in the world they were going to take me to this.
Yeah.
And I had to convince my elder sister, and I lived in Bedford, which is right on the border of Inglewood. Anyway, I convinced her to take me, so we went by tram to Perth and then the train to Claremont. She wasn't interested at all. And so anyway, she took me a couple of times, and then she said she wouldn't take me again. So I made sure at school I got involved with either boys or girls, it didn't matter who it was. By that time I'd left Christian Brothers. This is a couple of years later. I made sure that I got to know people that were involved in Speedway. And anyway, used to...
Was that a bit of a niche target?
It wasn't. It's funny. Often kids would... Because you've got to remember, back in those days, it was football, cricket, trotting.
Yeah.
But it was only Speedway and trotting on a Friday night, and there wasn't a lot of other things to do.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, of course, it was football. And horse racing went all year long. And so Speedway was a place that where a lot of people went, not so much now because of the fact that there's so many other things to do in Perth. But in those days, they were the three or four major things happening at nighttime or around the day as far as sports concerned.
Yeah. How old were you when you got those tickets then?
I was around about 13.
13.
And then from then on, I haven't missed a night hardly. Well, I haven't missed a night or a day involved in it. And I've flown hundreds of thousands of miles. I've driven thousands and thousands of miles. And I've done calling all over Australia and all over the world. So it's been
a ride.
Yeah, and plus I've contracted some of the world's best riders and drivers most of them have leaving us, either world champions or become NASCAR drivers or whatever. That was another great buzz to think that you played a big part in their early development in their Speedway careers.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people who are immensely grateful to you, for your passion and your dedication. Outside of racing, I know you took your wife Linda on your first date.
Correct.
To the Speedway.
I was a raw romantic.
No illusions there. No. It's like if this is going to be a thing, then you're going to have to love Speedway too. Right. Tell me how you guys met and how that conversation about the first date went.
Well, I had a mate of mine. I was looking for a girl to share my passion with, or say to go somewhere, to come to the Speedway with me. So he introduced me to Linda and I asked her to come to the Speedway, and we were both kids.
And what was her initial response? Was
I suppose so.
Not the movies?
It wasn't the movies, no. Anyway, I was a big spender. I think I bought her a Coca-Cola and a packet of Aurora Jubes, and we sat up on Foul House Corner, and she got covered in mud, but she seemed to like it. So. Not the mud part of it, but she seemed to enjoy the involvement. She got a couple of drivers that she saw that she liked, away we went, and of course that got interrupted a little bit when we had children, but generally overall she's been right with me all the way, and every person you ever hear, they always say you've got to have a very... And in fact, I'm sure that a lot of wives would not have put up with the time that I spent.
It's not for everyone, is it?
No.
And, you know, male or female.
And of course, you know, again, if you're doing country speedway, for instance, if I was Friday night, there was nothing unusual for me to Saturday night in Kalgoorlie, Albany.
Yeah.
I've been to Port Hedland, do shows like that, you know, so you were away from home a lot on the weekend and to have a wife, and then particularly when the kids come along, she was sort of bringing the kids up on her own.
Yeah.
I was following a dream, and we were supposed to be getting on pretty well about it. And
she seemed,
well, she'd probably minded, but she accepted it.
She accepted it. She saw the passion you had for it and, and let it go.
Yeah.
There you go. She must be mildly pleased then that you're able to step back and do other things nowadays.
Well, she's as big a fan, if not than me now. And
is that right?
I can see that her, my eldest son, Stephen, who never raced speedway, though he rode motocross, he goes down every Saturday night, so I think he's going to be going down with Mum every Saturday. So she will still continue to go, and I'll go occasionally.
Yeah.
I think that she's on. I'm not on Facebook or anything like that because she reckons I'd end up in jail if I was on Facebook. So I've stayed away from it.
Why is that? What would you be in jail for?
She said some of the things that get said about Speedway and about people. Some of them are really vicious and nasty.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of nice people too. But she said that she doesn't think I'd.
You and Donald Trump. Banned from Facebook.
I suppose so.
I don't want to draw any.
I don't want to be compared with him.
No, exactly. I put you guys in the same sentence. Very good. Before you got sort of absolutely bogged down in this world of speedway, though, you mentioned before you worked for Walpamuir.
Walpamuir,
The paint company. Tell me how that came about. What was your job? What was your lifestyle like then?
Well, I the school holidays came along one year, and I was off. They used to employ children. A lot of people, kids used to get jobs for the Christmas holidays. And I got a job for the Christmas holidays. And when my stint of that Christmas holidays finished, I was about 15, I think, the big boss of the company came to me and he said, we're very impressed with you, young Con, and we would like to know that when you decide to give school away, there's a position here for you. Anyway, I went and spoke to my parents, and I didn't like school, and I wasn't that good at school. So I went back and saw them. I said, yes, I'd like to do it. So I was a clerk in the office, in the dispatch office at Walpamuir, and then from there I went to night school and did several courses in like typing and little things like that, which I should have been doing at school, but I was a dreamer. Anyway, I then went on and become a company rep. And stayed there. I was with Walpamuir 16 years, so I only ever had two jobs in my life.
Yeah, right.
I worked for Walpamuir Paints, and then the end of my life, as far as work was concerned, I was in the speedway industry, running Claremont or either Perth Motorplex. And then, of course, since I retired from my week in and week out job, I did a lot of other things. But my only two main employment jobs were like Walpamuir Paints and Speedway.
Yeah, there you go. There's a lot of loyalty there.
Unbelievable. I was very loyal.
A model employee.
I think so. I hope so.
And you probably haven't had one stint of long service leave in all that time.
No. And that was another thing. And of course, even I'm prior superannuation.
Yeah.
So my superannuation, I was a self-funded retiree. I'm not like the people today. Which I think
adding to it over the years.
And that's... that's something that I did miss out on, but the other things that I gained out of my life was probably better than dollars and cents.
Worth more than that.
Yeah.
Your love of cars. I mean, clearly you love the sport of speedway motoring, but is there an underlying love of cars? Were you one of those kids that just was always, you know, looking out for a new model of this, or you know, had a favourite one of those, and you'd get excited if you saw one? Were you that sort of kid?
No.
No?
I love cars and I love motorcycles.
Yeah.
But no, I don't really know a lot about cars.
No.
In fact, I've given a lot of talks at
Roadkill. I find that surprising.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always say to them, whatever you do, when we come to the question and answer time, please do not ask me technical questions because I could tell you anything. I don't really know a lot about them. So I just chose to, I just love the sport and that was
it. You love it when they go fast.
Yeah, love when they're fast. And there were a lot of brilliant men in the speedway industry, like car builders, manufacturers, engineers, mechanics, and they're unbelievable to think that these people behind the scenes that are doing this day in and day out and don't get any praise or publicity for it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They're well known within the speedway industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you certainly, as you say, did your best to spread the gospel and take it to the masses. We need to take another break, Con, but after that, I want to ask you about your Claremont days. When I was doing my research on you, it was a jolt to me to think that finished up 21 years ago. I suddenly felt my age, Con, because
right.
I remember it so well, and it was such an institution. But it all sort of, all things come to an end, don't they? And so it did in the year 2000, 21 years ago. I couldn't believe it.
It was unbelievable.
But it was a controversial time at some points, wasn't it? Being nestled in there in that part of Perth.
And disappointing.
Yeah.
I think that the landlords, the Royal Agriculture Society, wish them any bad luck or bad will, but they could have handled it a lot better. They really treated us pretty shabbily. But,
yeah.
I'm not a bitter person, but I do know for a fact that if they'd been smart, we probably could have remained there. And probably even with the money that we'd got from the state government to build the motorplace, could have put a roof over the Claremont Showgrounds and maybe had a magnificent stadium. I don't know.
We'll never know. We'll get into that after we take a break. This is Inspiring Stories. Con Migro is our special guest. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. My special guest in this episode is the one and only Con Migro. We've heard a couple of examples of his fine work behind the microphone. Some fine work behind the microphone at the moment as well, Con, but in a slightly more subdued state than what a lot of people would be used to. Claremont Speedway, it was such an institution. As I mentioned before the break, it was a jolt to me just to read again that it was 21 years ago that it finally wrapped up, because it seemed like one of those things that was just a part of the geography and the DNA of Perth.
It was.
I'm trying to imagine now, though, if I was sort of, 20 growing up, it'd be almost unthinkable that you'd have this very noisy sport nestled in the rarefied air of the Golden Triangle.
Correct.
Of Perth in Claremont. How did you manage it? How did you keep it there for so long?
Well, I'll tell you a little story. Claremont started in 1927. It was from Fremantle in the same year that John Hoskins took the sport of speedway racing to England. And now it is a very, very big sport in England, in Europe, particularly in Poland at the moment. It's nearly on the national sport, but right through Sweden, you name it, and the United States. Now, car racing originated from America. Motorcycle racing originated from Australia. So Claremont played a major part in the sport. And anyway, we were pretty fortunate to stay where we were. Geoffrey Miller was a partner of mine. He was a QC in Perth. And we were taken to court by the town of Claremont, not by any of the residents, but by the town of Claremont, no doubt driven by some of the residents, to say that we constituted a noise. And in the court case, we did prove beyond doubt that we did not constitute the noise that they were saying. And we won the court case. The only mistake that I made then was that the town of Claremont asked for the payments to be heard in camera after the end of the court case. And I said yes. Jeff said no. You should let that get out into the general public. So I said no. And we kept it in-house, as they say, in camera. And unfortunately for me, or for us, no one ever knows how much that case cost the town of Claremont. I know how much it cost Claremont Speedway to defend it.
Yeah.
And that was a considerable amount of money. And even Jeff, who was a dear friend of mine.
So that's a secret that you... you know the answer to it?
Well, I know what we paid. Yeah. And I know the money that we were paying the
people
QC,
of Claremont still
we're
none the wiser.
QC daily.
Yeah.
I think the court case went about 10 or 11 days.
Yeah.
And anyway, we constituted, we proved beyond doubt that we didn't constitute the noise that they were trying to say. But Jeff did say to me, look, Connie said, I don't see you there for very much longer. He said, I would suggest to think that there'll come a time when you've got to go. And I think we lasted another 25 years, which was quite amazing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't without a fight.
We
were constantly in conflict with a lot of times. And even when we went from Clem, a lot of people think we were closed because of the noise, and it wasn't. The Royal Agriculture Society had some people come along and advise them that they were going to have a thing called The Land, and it was going to be like bringing the country to the city, a little bit like, say, a Disneyland type thing, and Claremont Showgrounds would become the centrepiece for anything to do with agriculture. It has never happened, which is unfortunate, because it is a wonderful location and right on the trains and the like. Now, as you see the huge development, particularly around Claremont Oval, I would suggest to say that it won't be long before the Claremont Showgrounds will have to move from there. Although
it's a prime piece of land, isn't it?
Well, it's got to be. And, you know, if they were smart, they would make the move. They did it in Sydney. I know it's heartbreaking, but and in fact, there's some wonderful places they could build the showground, I'm sure, where they could have a lot more ease of getting to in and out of the place. But anyway, that's not my problem. My problem is we've got the Motorplex now.
Well, yeah, which is a magnificent facility.
There's the best speedway drag racing strip in the world, particularly the speedway. And in fact, it's not unlike the football stadium we have at Optus. Here in Optus Stadium, here in West Australia. So, we've got a world-class building one in Sydney.
Is that you with your shameless self-promoter hat on, though, Con, or is it genuinely able to claim that?
I can say that without fear of contradiction. In fact, there's not a major speedway in the world other than the recent 5 or 6, 10 years in Poland that they have a purpose-built venue like we've had. Most of the tracks in America, I'm talking speedway tracks now, are on fairgrounds. They call their showgrounds fairgrounds. There are some purpose-built tracks, but generally when I first started going there, they were fairgrounds. But even when they built a purpose-built one, they were nothing like the facility we've got at Claremont. We've got 6 hectares of pits. We've got reticulated water and power to each of the transporters when they pull in. We have a big work shed with a proper weigh bridge in there. I mean, those things that the Americans still bring the scales to the tracks and weigh the cars. I mean, it's quite what we've got here. And again, it's something that we've got to be proud of in West Australia. And I've often said to different people, I'd love to meet the Minister for Sport. They promote the football and cricket of this stadium in Perth, but they should also be looking at a sport like speedway and the drag strip with the facility we've got. And they bring quite a considerable amount of people, nowhere near the thing that footy and cricket does. I'm not going to try and convince you that we do, but we still, in our own little right, draw a lot of people, particularly when big race meetings like Australian titles, World Series, where they come to Perth. A lot of people follow those right around the country.
Yeah, yeah. Just going back to Claremont. So you reckon the residents there were generally pretty supportive of you guys being there?
It was only the older ones, because I was in the Rotary Club down there. In fact, I'm a past president of the Claremont Cottesloe Rotary. And all the older people, say, of my vintage, they used to say to me that Speedway was the sound of summer. It was only when the new people moved in, and I'm not knocking them, they had a right to live there, but they would move in, and the first thing they knew the speedway was being, it's like building a house alongside a Perth airport.
Yeah.
And you know that planes...
You move in there and then complain about the sound of the planes.
That's what happened. And so what actually happened, a lot of people moved into that area, and the first thing they heard was the noise, and they complained about the noise.
Mm.
And yet it had been there since 1927, long before
they arrived.
Born, that's right.
Yeah.
But that's life, and we can't ever stop people complaining.
Will always have a whinge.
Unbelievable.
You can be guaranteed of that.
It is a real good suburb. I mean, it's close to ocean. It's close to shops.
Yeah.
It's close to city. There's proper transport. A brilliant transport.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's a desirable place to live.
All the technology that you mentioned there that you've been able to incorporate into the new facility, the Perth Motorplex down Kwinana Way. That aside, did the culture of the sport change at all, taking it out of its spiritual home in Claremont and relocating it down into the south of Perth?
It's taken a long time.
Has it?
Yeah. Of course, when we first opened, we went on Friday nights.
Mm.
And I remember the first night we had such a crowd we couldn't get them in. And we had traffic jams all over the area. I remember Richard Court was coming to open the venue on behalf of the Premier. I think he was about an hour late getting to the opening. And
the politicians have to go to all sorts of different events. Richard Court at a Motorplex just seems an odd fit, doesn't it?
Well, he was the member for Nedlands, and he was. In fact, I met him at the Speedway before that, many years before that. But and the Kwinana Freeway, well, those days was controlled by traffic lights. So down, you haven't got the straight runs through. So from Mount Henry Bridge to Mandurah, you have traffic lights every couple of days. And so consequently, it was difficult to get there. Friday night when everyone was leaving their work, whether they were going north, east, south or west, and the Kwinana Freeway was like a parking area. And so we found it impossible to get the people in after the first couple of nights, and we lost a huge amount of money. In fact, if we hadn't gone to Saturday night, we probably wouldn't have even been operating there anyway. So we decided to go to Saturday night, and that was difficult. Then we had to immediately change the competitors' thinking because they had been used to Friday night. Often they would get themselves Saturday night events throughout the country areas. And so all of a sudden they only had mainly Claremont on a Saturday night, the Motorplex on a Saturday night. But it solved the problem. And up until the last two seasons, the crowds have come back. And in fact, last year was the best in the time that we've been.
Is that right?
So 21 years it took. So you could say it took a good 18 years before we started to
found your feet again.
Yeah, kicking a bit of backside, as they say.
Yeah, good stuff. We need to take another break, Con, but plenty more of your story to get through right after this. This is Inspiring Stories. Con Migro is our special guest. Back with more soon.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
G'day, Con. It seems you and I are now definitely the back markers. Congratulations on a stellar career at the Speedway. You were iconic.
I remember meeting Con a long time ago. It was that long ago. It was before I started here in Victoria Park. And ever since then, Con Migro has been an absolute icon in the Speedway business.
Con Migro, you were the soundtrack to my youth. Growing up at Claremont Speedway, Friday night was Speedway night. You calling the sprint cars, the winged warriors who were always high, wide and handsome through turns one and two, foul house corner at Claremont. Congratulations on not only a career, but a lifetime of bringing so many people such great memories of Speedway. Congratulations, and look forward to having a beer at the bar with you.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories, some of the many heartfelt tributes to a pretty unique man in the sport of Speedway motoring, particularly here in WA in Con Migro, our special guest in this episode of Inspiring Stories. Con, it must be nice to hear from some great names in the sport now who feel like they owe you so much to the you know, this, the personal success that they've achieved. It's got a lot to do with your passion and commitment to the sport here.
Well, I never ever, as I said earlier, I didn't ever thought that that was happening, but I'm pleased that they have felt honoured enough and to think that those people have been kind enough to take the time to send messages for me from all over the world.
Yeah.
Just here in Perth, and a lot of people that were in the media, particularly I used to hound trying to get them to get a story on the Seven News or wherever we were doing things, and that was great.
Yeah.
To think that all those years they appreciated, or they probably thought of this, I might say Con Migro.
Yeah. Oh, Con's on the phone. I'll hold it far away from my ear in case he gets revved up again. Having said that, I mean, a lot of the news coverage you might have been able to get, if my memory serves correctly, it would have been crashes, those spectacular moments, you know, cars catching on fire, that sort of stuff. Did it irk you at all that people were just getting exposure to that stuff, the kind of extreme moments and not just the pure racing?
Well, it was a lot of the Saturday night news was that.
Yeah.
But building up to the sport was 7, 9, 10 in later years, particularly with Ian Brayshaw and the ABC. In fact, I did a regular stint on the ABC with George Grujicic and I think even Dennis Cometti at the time prior to that, or at that time, I used to do a preview of Speedway, and George used to, you know, now listen, Migro, no, we're at the ABC, no commercial, you're not allowed to mention Hondas and Kawasaki's, all this stuff. So I used to do a preview, and so building up to the sport, to the events, we used to get it. And then through radio station, particularly with Watsy and Martin on, can I mention 6BR?
Yeah.
We did a lot of things with them. But then after the event, if there had been a crash, that was often would lead the news. And that I found hard to swallow.
Yeah.
Because I didn't look at the sport as that part of it. I looked at it as being a pure sport like football or cricket.
Yeah.
But when we look back, it was always the fight at the football between gun players that maybe got the headline. So that's just how people are, I suppose.
Yeah. Which I suppose feeds into that perception from those who haven't bothered to investigate the sport properly, that they see it as this, you know, this sport of revved up people who just want to drive cars fast and maybe recklessly, that don't appreciate the pure skill in it.
Well, maybe they think that we're some sort of group of people that got some sort of death wish. I don't know what it is. And yet far from it. You'd probably find some of the most intelligent people on the planet, but their choice in doing...
It's just where they get their thrills.
That's right. This is a sport.
Are you a fast driver yourself,
No.
Con? No? I'm not. How many speeding tickets have you had over the years?
I've had a few, but not many. But I've slowed down in my older age, as we say. But no, I'm not particularly a fast driver.
Yeah.
I've had a pretty clean record.
Yeah.
I've never lost my license. Touch wood. I'm touching the head not to do that. So that's been pretty good. Yeah.
Those speeding tickets, have they come after a big night at the speedway?
No.
Where you've got that revved up feeling and the fuel in the veins.
Well, I would often be very fortunate. I had a chauffeur.
Look at you.
I'd always have a few beers. I found it very difficult after a 4 or 5 hour commentary.
Yeah.
Even when I would get home, I would spend Saturday or Friday night or then Saturday night, the rest of the night, restless. I couldn't sleep properly. And in fact, it wouldn't be nothing unusual to be out of bed 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning because my head was still spinning.
Yeah.
And then I used to correspond. I correspond with about 1,800 people around the world now, and send off the results of the Motorplex and the like. So I just couldn't turn off.
Yeah.
Which
is understandable because you're so elevated.
You're in the moment.
It's hard to just turn that off.
Yeah, it is. It's very. And I often used to. I read a story once with Stirling Moss, who was a great Formula One driver. He said that often after an event. For a couple of hours after the event, he was still very much in a deep concentration of what he had been doing on the track. And I would think that you'd probably find football commentators, not so much cricket commentators because that's very laid back.
Mm.
After a big footy game, particularly after a speedway race meeting, every week's the same thing. You are very G'd up. And if you're not G'd up.
You're not doing it right.
And I still, to this day, I got very nervous. And I find that even... I'm glad that I was getting to this very anxious on a sad day. I found I don't really want to go down tonight. Not because I didn't want to see the racing, it was because I was so keen and wanting to make sure tonight was going to be a good show.
Mm.
And I did a lot of research into it.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit like Dennis Comedy and David Christensen did. I mean, those guys, as you know,
they
did research and that's how they, even Basil Zemplis, the same thing. I mean, those, I'm not trying to compare myself with them, but that's what you do when you're doing commentary. If you don't know your subject, you get found out pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And stepping away from that, I mean, switching it off, it's got to be hard, right?
It is. And October is going to be my first big test.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to react.
What are you going to do with those nights when you're not there?
Well, that's going to be the big test. I don't know. And even now I question myself. I mean,
I can imagine you pacing around your house like a caged animal.
Probably, if Linda's there, I'll be ringing her and saying, what's going on?
So Linda would go, but you...
She's going to go with my son.
Yeah, right. Okay.
That's the way I plan things. But I'm still going to go down some shows. I'm going to be still very keen to know what's going on. And with young Gavin running the speedway side of the Motorplex, I'm very keen.
It's still there.
Although I don't see a lot of Gav because I know how busy he is when he's operating.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss the trips. Not so much, I wasn't going to America and Europe, it sounds pretty romantic and exciting, but it wasn't. I had to go there to do a job.
Yeah.
But I'm going to miss the side of getting the top riders and drivers to bring them to this country, into this state.
Yeah.
And I'll miss that side because
Here's
a lot of things people don't understand this, but I bought the guys like Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, as you know, in the sport. They are the world's top drivers.
Mm.
Peter Collins, world champion. Anders Michnik, the Swede, Funder North. I bought them to this country, to this state, on a handshake.
Mm.
I said to them, you come and race for me. This is the money that we'll pay you. And they agreed or disagreed. If they disagreed, we'd talk a deal. And they come in, even the great Ivan Major, the world's greatest rider, they came in and rode for me and drove for me in a handshake and my word. And how's that? Now, you imagine trying to do that today with the way sport is. I mean, and rightly so. Because
it's laughable, isn't it?
It is. But I can't believe that I actually did that and pulled those off.
Yeah.
But in the last 20 years in particular, and that's the last 18 years in particular, Gavin's had to now, it's a whole different ballgame you're dealing with guys that... more of men of the world, I suppose, and they are making livings out of it. Well, they were making a living out of it, but they make serious money now.
Mm.
So they consequently, it's a whole different ball game. But yeah, brought these guys to Australia in a handshake.
Yep. You know, and people, for, as you say, all over the world. You know, Russians.
Yep.
Poles.
Yeah. Well, the English team. Nigel Burcock captained England. He was a very dear friend of mine. He rode for Coventry in the British League. It was his idea. It wasn't Con Migro's idea, and it wasn't something new. We had been test matches before.
Yeah.
But he and myself used to get together and talk. On by phone mainly, and we'd get six or seven of the England's top riders and bring them to Perth. I, what they called, underwrote the series. It sounds like I put a lot of money, but I didn't. And underwriting means that you guaranteed that they would get these events, and if the events did fall through, well, then we would have had to fix them up. But we had guys like Michael Lee, world champion, Peter Collins, OBE, MBE, a lot of these guys, John Davis, who is now a major caterer in England, who rode the pool. These guys that come and rode, as they say, for a handshake, and Andy Smith, British champions, the whole, that these young men trusted me and they knew that they were going to get a fair deal. And it was, as far as the Americans are concerned, Bob Trosser from Des Moines in Iowa.
Yep.
I would bring him, and he bought some of the world's top sprint car drivers, and we actually saw them at Clement, Doug Wolfgang's, the Steve Kinses, the Kenny Jacobs, those guys that, to the normal sporting people, they probably don't know them, but if you look through the history of motorsport, I mean, I bought Tony Stewart to Australia. I bought Jeff Gordon to Australia when he's 14. I saw him race, and Bob Trossel timed it.
14.
14. And he in the World Sprint Car Championship, 1987, he won the Friday night feature race. And then 2 years later, when he was 16, I brought him back in a speed car. Now, when he finished his racing career in NASCAR, he was the highest paid NASCAR driver in the world. And he was pulling in millions.
Mm.
And I think in merchandise alone, he had three semi-trailers, as they say, on the road all day, every day, going to fairgrounds and that, selling his merchandise. And he was pulling over $20 million out of that. So that's another thing why America's so important. They make they have a T-shirt or a cap, or whatever, jackets, whatever, for every event.
Yeah.
And the fans, because there's 330 million people there.
A lot of merchandising opportunities.
Because the Americans, I say, they are big T-shirt wearers.
Yeah.
And every big event coming up, it was like the other week when the Eagles were playing the Dockers, there would have been a special T-shirt for that, the 60th game or whatever.
Yep.
And they'd sell in the thousands.
Mm. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Amazing stories, Con. Good luck when October comes around and you have to force yourself to do something other than what you have been doing now for, well, over 50 years.
So 60 years.
60 years. Yeah. No, seriously, good luck with that.
Well, I'm looking forward to that part.
Enjoy being a spectator for a change.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely I'll probably come after bowls. So if we've won, I'll be feeling very excited. If we're lost, I'll be a bit gloomy. But actually, I'm looking forward to again. I mean, you know, surprisingly, even down at the track when you're doing the commentary, you don't run into the competitors a lot. So it's after the meetings when you walk to the transports, say good day and congratulate them or whatever.
Yeah.
So you don't really see a lot of them.
Yeah.
Like you did at Clement.
Well, you can do things differently now. You can strut around there, you know, being the godfather that you are.
Godfather. Oh, my God. Perish the thought.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I really appreciate it. And good luck with everything.
Thank you.
And thank you for your contribution to the sport and to the industry over many, many years.
Well, thanks
Incredible.
For having me. And I hope that I have inspired someone today, either male or female.
Inspired and educated, I dare say.
That's right. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, and it does prove you don't have to be a great racer or a player sometimes to get a niche in any sport. Mm. If you want to, you're driven enough to make it happen.
Yep. Nice pun to finish on there too, Con. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inspiring Stories here on 882 6PR. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us next time as we unearth another inspiring story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.